Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Show.
Hey, all you superstar HR and people operations leaders out there. Thanks for coming back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host for today, Bruce Marable, CEO of the All-in-One HR Analytics Dashboard. That's right, we bring all your data together from all your disparate and disconnected HR systems. And today, I am so happy and thrilled to introduce a guest who has become, you know, a friend in the HR space. I met her at one of the Disrupt HR events in New York, where she did an amazing job. And today we're going to talk about the topic, how should HR track, manage, and analyze employee issues and relations? It's a huge topic. There's a lot of things going on with Me Too, gender pay inequality, diversity. There's just so many things, and companies are constantly tripping over themselves, getting in trouble. So we're going to talk to an expert in this space. Let's give a huge welcome to the podcast to Deb Muller, CEO and founder of HR Acuity.
Woo!
Deb!
Wow, that is quite an opening. Thanks, Bruce. It's great to be here and to spend the afternoon with you.
Thank you so much for taking out time of your super busy schedule to be on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
So the question that we always start off with is, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
So the story goes, it's actually true. I was a senior in high school and I was looking for colleges. And my aunt, who had gone to Cornell University back in the 50s, said to me, I really think you should look at this school that Cornell has. It's the School of Industrial and Labor Relations. I'm like, I don't know what that is. And so I went and I looked at the curriculum, and there were no science requirements and there were no math requirements. So as sad as that sounds, I was like, hey, I could do this. So I went, and basically people that went were either went to the HR track or they ended up going to law school. And I knew I didn't want to go to law school. So that's how I went through and started in my career of HR, taking classes such as classes like fringe benefits. And it kind of dates me a little bit. But the real funny thing about it is years later, my parents were cleaning out their house as parents do and kind of coming to your house with boxes of things. And in those boxes was like a career assessment test I had taken in high school or at junior high school about like what you're going to be when you grow up, you know, and I think Bruce, you won't remember this, but like a dot matrix, you know, printer paper. So it's really old. And so I'm like, oh, let me go through and see what it is. And it said that I should either be the president of the Chamber of Commerce or personnel director. No clue. It's the funniest thing in the world. So I like to think I'm not a personnel director, but you know, back then that was kind of how we were named, I guess.
That's a very specific job title. The head of a
is that funny?
The head of a chamber of commerce. That's so random.
I know. So that's how I ended up here. And so the fact that I am now the CEO of a technology company is somewhat ironic. Because I wanted to avoid, you know, science and math at all costs.
But you brought it full circle, and you're using technology to help companies. So please tell us about HR Acuity. What do you do, and how are you helping companies manage all of their employee relations and employee issues?
Yeah, I mean, it's somewhat relevant to what you were saying today. You know, the workplaces are really being shaken by cases of harassment and discrimination, which has been happening for a while, but certainly coming to light much more so now through hashtags and social media. And so what we really do is we know that organizations can't prevent these employee issues from happening. But what we do know is that we can help them change how they respond to them. So we are the technology solution that supports clear and consistent processes so that employees trust that their concerns are going to be taken seriously, that they're going to be addressed fairly, and really help organizations manage employee relations in a modern way. It helps them be proactive to identify things that are happening before they happen. It certainly helps them to manage risk, the cost, the brand damage that can happen with these issues. And you know, I think really more important is create a safer workplace for the employees.
So a question that I'm always thinking about in regards to managing these situations is it HR's fault that a lot of these issues have been happening and they haven't been dealt with properly? Do you think they're handcuffed by a lot of the policies that companies have in place for them not to do anything? I mean, what is your take on that?
So it's interesting because, so before I was in this role, before I founded the company, I practiced human resources for many years. And human resources is one of those functions that it's just very personal to people. People just have a reaction to it. And sometimes it's a very visceral reaction, right? There's such emotion when it comes to human resources. People either like it or they really hate human resources, right? You don't get that with any other function in companies. You don't hear people saying, oh my God, I hate marketing or I hate what sales. But human resources, you tend to get that reaction. And so in my career, and maybe up until recently, when people would say negative things about human resources or they didn't listen, they didn't do the right thing, I was always not on the defensive, but I always put myself in another bucket. Oh, that's the rest of human resources. We actually, I feel like as a professional, people felt comfortable coming to me. We had the right practices, processes in place. And then when Me Too hit and we started seeing some of the statistics about people not coming forward, and you know, and there's one statistic where it's 25 to 85% of incidents don't get reported, which is a really wide range. But even if it's just 25%, it really made me think, and even as an HR professional, take some accountability to say, huh, maybe what I was doing wasn't so great, and maybe we need to really relook at our processes. So I do think there are certainly organizations where the culture is such where it is very difficult for human resources to do the right thing and have processes in place. I mean, if you think about Uber, and I don't know, I know they're making changes, but if we think about a year and a half ago when Susan Fowler's blog came out, and I don't know if your listeners know about that, but when her blog came out talking about her year at Uber, certainly that was cultural. And I don't know how you could have worked in HR there, but it was a big cultural problem. But I think that what is now demanded of human resource professionals is to think about what we're doing and pivot. We have to do something differently. We can't keep saying we have policies, we're going to do more training, we're going to revamp our policies. We have to think about what are we not doing? What are things that before we might have said, no way, we're not going to do that, and think about how they can really change the environment to make employees feel more comfortable coming forward.
So let's break this into three different sections. First, let's talk about what is the status and the state of employee relations and just what does that look like? How are people perceiving it? Then we'll talk about how companies should track and manage this process. What does that look like, especially using technology to do it? And then we'll go into how do you actually analyze the data to see how you can actually make that data actionable to hopefully be more proactive and maybe even in the future predict how you can solve some of these problems. Does that work for you?
That's great.
Okay,
yeah.
So the state of employee relations, what does that typically look like? What are some of the most prevalent employee relations that companies are dealing with, small, medium, large? And just in general, what are we talking about and typically thinking about when we say employee relations or employee issues?
It's interesting. We have a group of kind of a round table of employee relations leaders, and on my list of things to do with them is to actually survey them and ask them to each define employee relations, because I think that would be actually a really interesting thing to see how they talk about it. But employee relations general, I think, has really changed recently. When I was practicing, when I was, you know, an HR generalist, an HR business leader, employee relations, from my perspective, was very reactional, and it was something that you did. It was sort of like payroll. It just happened. It came to your desk. You dealt with an issue, and that was it. It was not, you know, it wasn't kind of some sexy function. It wasn't org design or comp or talent management or leadership design. It was just employee relations. We've really seen a shift to that lately. It is certainly becoming much more strategic. We're seeing that in larger organizations, and we're seeing smaller organizations change as well. We do a report, a benchmark study every year, and your listeners, if they're welcome to go to our website and download it. We just released the second portion of it. And the second piece was all about the centralization of employee relations. So organizations lately are really starting to think about the risk associated with employee behaviors, and hopefully the data and the understanding of what they can get out of their employee relations or employee relations information. So over time, they have really trended towards centralizing this, and it's becoming a much more strategic function, which is a great sign. I'll tell you anecdotally, one of our clients and someone who's part of our community is TIA. It's a financial insurance organization. And Andy Havanick, who's their my contact there, got an email from him a couple weeks ago. And I looked down at the email, and under his signature line was his title. And it said Chief Employee Relations Officer. And I like dropped my pen because I'd never seen that before. And I immediately called him up and I'm like, Andy, I've never seen that title before. I'm like so excited. And we talked about it. I actually wrote a blog about it because I thought it really was a signal in his organization. But I think it sort of shows what's happening across the board that, you know, it is becoming really a strategic imperative in the human resource function. And I think organizational leaders, the C-suite, the boards are really starting to ask more questions about what's happening with employees, what can we learn about them, where are risks, and how can we be more proactive.
This chief employee relations officer, is this person typically reporting directly to the C-suite or the CEO?
Still reporting into the chief HR officer. And when I asked him about it, you know, and him and Sean Woodruff, who is the chief HR officer at TIA Craft, they said, you know, it kind of just made sense. I mean, they had a chief talent officer, they had a chief diversity officer, and employee relations, you know, really is a function that they see as integral to the business, integral to the employee experience, and it just made sense to bring it up there. So we hope we see more of that.
What are the top three employee relations issues that you see most companies face, and do they differ by industry or by region or even company size?
Yeah, I think it depends. I mean, typically when we look at organizations, they're dealing with things like administrative or regulatory issues, you know, allegations of harassment, discrimination. Certainly retaliation has really increased significantly in the last couple of years. Actually, there's more retaliation cases made to the EEOC than there are of race discrimination. It's the most frequently made claim. And actually, the reason is because most claims that come in, if it's a harassment claim, they're going to tack on a retaliation claim to it. So dealing with that is one thing. And then it's just, you know, how are we consistently managing employee behaviors? And how are we doing that? And when we talk about employee relations, I'm very clear with people, it's not just about the investigations. When it gets to the investigations, it's done, right? You have to deal with it. It's kind of after the fact. What you really want to do is proactively be looking at employee relations, what do I see in my employee behaviors? What can I see that are the predictive indicators that something else is happening? Just like we look at predictive indicators in sales and in marketing, we need to look at that with our human resources too. Is it looking at attendance and trends in attendance? Is it looking at turnover? How about behavioral issues? We had a client who told us that they had a section of their organization where they were experiencing high turnover, and it was a hard area to recruit for, so they were obviously putting a spotlight on that. When they were able to go in and look at the employee behaviors and the employee incidences, they found that within that group, they actually had a large number of those folks who left had been on some type of a performance issue during their tenure, or maybe the 12 months before they left. And that wasn't necessarily why they got terminated. It's just they had some type of a performance issue. So then they looked deeper and they found that the performance issues were really all around one particular area in the business or in their role in their job. So they changed their training and they trained better on that particular aspect of the job. And by doing that, they were able to reduce their turnover. So looking at the data is so important because you can be proactive. You can get ahead of trends. Same thing, if I start to see a lot of issues emanating from one particular location or for under one particular leader, it might tell me that something's going on. In a location, it might tell me that there's some union activity brewing, right? The union's kind of poking its fingers. You know, poking its fingers. I'm very bad at analogies, by the way. So I'll say things you're like, what? I'm kind of known for that around the office. anyway, so that, you know, they're kind of poking and kind of stoking the fire, I think is the correct one. So you might see more activity, which the company wants to be aware of and get ahead of. If it's under one particular leader, are there some behaviors that we need to be aware of? I mean, I always love to use Matt Lauer as my example, but, you know, Matt didn't walk into NBC one day and just start, you know, harassing people. He probably, you know, was kind of coming up in his career as a celebrity, and you can replace celebrity with, you know, top sales leader or something like that. And probably told a joke that was a little off colored. People probably laughed at it. No one did anything about it. So he told another one. And so he's kind of been given permission to behave this way. And the organization is seeing that nothing's happening about it. So it's going to continue and it's going to elevate. And then you're going to have an issue down the road. But if you can start to see those patterns and those trends, you can really get ahead of it before it becomes something that can really harm your organization.
Now, you were just talking about a retaliation claim, which I'm not sure how many of our listeners know what that is. I know I'm not. So can you go into detail about what is that and what does that look like?
Sure. So there are certain protections that you have. If you come forward and make a claim that's, let's say somebody's harassing you, let's say you say your boss is treating you differently for some protected reason, or you make some allegation, you bring some allegation forward, you are, and most companies have a non-retaliation policy where you don't have to worry that just by bringing that forward, you'll be retaliated against. So what can that look like? And it's a great question, because I think what it looks like is sometimes the problem. People think, I'm not going to retaliate against someone, but retaliation is the perception of retaliation. So let's say someone makes a claim against you, and, you know, maybe you didn't do anything wrong, but there's an investigation ongoing, but you feel a little bit awkward around that person because you know that this employee of yours, you know, has made a claim against you or has an allegation against you. So you know what? At lunchtime, you invite some other people to go to lunch with you, and you don't invite that person with you. That could be seen as retaliation. If an organization, someone makes an allegation against their boss and the organization says, you know what, we're going to move her into another role. Well, maybe that role doesn't have the advancement possibilities as she did in her other role. Or maybe it's a much further distance to work. So there's a hardship with transportation and commutation time. So that could be seen as retaliation. I mean, there's some much more obvious ones, you know, with pay or terminating someone for supposedly performance reasons or things like that. But they can also be much less obvious, and that's where organizations get into trouble.
And do retaliation claims typically come after an employee has made the first claim? Or is it sometimes where they won't even pursue some type of investigation? They'll literally just go to their HR person or their manager, just make a comment saying, oh, this type of thing is happening to me, but I don't necessarily want to go through with a full claim. And then something happens, and then I now need to actually move forward with an actual retaliation claim just based off of how I was feeling or a comment that I made to somebody that I thought I could trust.
Yeah, I think it could be both. I think the important thing from what you said is if you make a claim to your organization that basically, even if you're not overt about it, but basically even if you don't use the words like hostile work environment or sexual harassment, if you go to someone, a manager, it doesn't have to be HR, someone in a supervisory role, and you say to them, look, you know, I felt really uncomfortable because, I won't say Bruce, because, you know, Bob, you know, the way he acted towards me when we were out the other night, but I don't want to tell you, but please keep it confidential. Actually, the employer can't keep it that confidential. They have an obligation to investigate. So you have, in fact, put them on notice that there's an issue. So yes, if there's some retaliation, it could be after that, or certainly while they're doing an investigation. You know, and the tricky part is, and I think what HR professionals sometimes struggle with is, and sometimes that's happening, but there is a legitimate performance issue at the same time. So it's like, wait a second, they made this claim, but on the other hand, they haven't been performing and we were going to terminate them, right? Or we were going to take action. But now if we do it, it's going to look like it's retaliation. So there's a certain amount of people feeling handcuffed, Or, you know, oh, they just made the claim, so now we can't do anything. And again, that comes back to documentation. Did you document it? You know, if you ever were, you know, pressed to defend that, do you have documentation to show that there was performance issues previously, that you were, had conversations about managing that performance before that, that claim was made? So again, documentation is so critical to mitigating risk.
And then last question for this section, is it a myth that more women are making claims than men because of sexual harassment, Me Too, discrimination, bias, or is that actually true?
Oh, I don't know exactly, again, we don't know, but I mean, I would assume that yes, many more women make claims than men, but men certainly do make claims, and it could be, you know, against a female coworker, it could be against a male coworker. So there's both happening, but it would be predominantly, I'm sure if we looked at the numbers, it would be females.
Got it. Thanks for that. So moving on to talking about the best way to track and manage these claims, what was the reason why HR Acuity was really created to help companies better track and manage all of these employee relations cases? Were companies just forgetting that they were that it actually happened, and then employees had to keep going back to the HR leader and saying, hey, this thing is happening to me. I have this hostile work environment. My work life sucks. You're not paying attention. Yeah. Was it more they would not forget, but they just didn't want to deal with it because they felt that it would bring some type of legal action or something against their company? I mean, what was the real problem, and still is the real problem, around how current HR leaders are tracking and managing these employee relation issues?
Yeah, so they just weren't, for the most part. It was something that came to your desk. You, as the HR person, you dealt with it. You put it in your spiral notebook, which I know a lot of HR professionals walk around with. I know I did. And you kind of dealt with it. You put it in your folder, and that was it. So, well, you leave the organization. Your folders go with you, or they stay somewhere. There's no continuity, there's no ability to trend, there's no ability to track, and then there's no ability to find that documentation when you need it to make sure it's appropriate and available. So that's one thing. The other reason that we felt there was a need for this, that there's a total lack of consistency. So consistency in remediation, right? So if I'm just dealing with my group of employees, how do I know how other HR colleagues are doing it in the organization? So that can cause potential disparate impact in the organization. And I know you're going to ask me to define that. So well, just a second. I've already caught on to you, Bruce. But it also could cause just bad practices. We had a client who identified that there were some forgery issues or fraud issues, very large organization, and they were being treated differently. Some people were getting slaps on the wrist, you know, kind of a verbal or a written warning. Other people were being terminated for it. That's not a good business practice. But they would have never known that if they didn't have a solution that they could look to see, you know, how are we treating similar issues? Are we doing consistently? You know, consistency of process, we always say, leads to consistency of outcomes.
So are there any legal ramifications or negative impact that could happen from you not being consistent? Or is best practice?
Yeah, so I'll go back to the disparate impact, right? So let's say we have, the easiest example is tardiness, right? So we have a large organization, or it doesn't even have to be that large. And we have people that are tardy, and some people we let them get away with it, and other people we fire. Well, let's say the people that we're firing are all women. And the people that we're hired, that we're just giving warnings to are all men. That's got class action written all over it. So it can be, you know, and it's interesting, but it's going to protect you to be consistent, but it also can help your defense. So let's say I have been terminated from my company, and I believe it is because I'm a woman. So I go to the EEOC and I say, look, you know, Bruce's company, they got rid of me. It's because I'm a woman. So their EEOC is going to go back to you and ask you, you know, why you terminated Deb. And so you might say, well, she couldn't get to work on, I mean, she was terrible. She wasn't doing her job. Now, if you don't have any data to prove that, that's not going to be great. But maybe you do, right? Maybe you have a document that shows, you know, all the performance reviews you got me. So the EEOC will come back to her and say, look, they have all this documentation. She'll say, that's right, they do. But all the men, they got away with that. So if you have a good system and you're using it, you're being consistent, you can also, what you really want to show is, look, this is how we treated Deb. She had these performance issues. We let her go. And here's all these other people that might not look like Deb, might be a different gender than Deb, and we treated them the same way. Kind of case closed. But you have to be able to prove that.
Got it. So now that we're talking about consistency, what are the main sections or components of filing a claim appropriately or accurately? Is it, I mean, name, date, the claim? Are there specific sections of this claim that needs to be reported in regards to type of? Are you, in regards to, is it a sexual harassment versus bias versus discrimination?
Assuming that you're making it, you have an allegation, you have an issue that you're bringing up internally to human resources within your company, there's no guidelines. All you have to say is, look, something's going on. You don't have to use a term. You don't have to say, it's hostile work environment. You just have to say something's not going right. And by the way, most companies will investigate you should be investigating things that are potential violations of your policy. So forget about the legality of it. Organizations have policies about how they expect people to behave, and that's what they should be investigating on. So they don't have to have fancy names or legalese. So if I come forward, I can just say, look, something's going on. My boss is not treating me properly. I don't think he's being fair, whatever the issue is. So then it's the human resources role to do a complete intake and really understand it. And the way we train people is really to take that as a kind of a fact finding, as if you're a reporter. You want to know kind of the who, what, when, where, and how. And that initial intake interview is so critical to get all that information, to get all the facts, to say, well, why do you think that? You know, someone can make a claim, but they have to give you some details to support the allegation. They can't just say, well, I just don't think they like me. That's great, but, you know, tell me a little bit more. You really have to give you, well, this happened, you know, I think that I didn't get the promotion than I should have, and John got it. He's younger than me, and I think that's why. Well, what makes you think that? Well, in my last review, my manager said I was ready for a promotion. Here's my review. And by the way, I was in a meeting, and in a couple meetings, she always refers to my way of thinking as old school. Okay? Those are some details that you're going to want to get out, because those are going to be part of your investigation to make a determination on whether or not John just wasn't right for the promotion, he didn't have the skills, or if perhaps there was some underlying reason for him not getting the promotion.
So in regards to how companies are managing these issues, you know, all of our listeners are primarily HR leaders. So I know they're listening intently for how they could better manage this. So what does your system do to really automate and streamline this process?
Yeah, so our system has primarily two functionalities. And the way we think about it is in this paradigm of traffic light. So green light is all the policies and practices, documents, expectations, plans that you put in place that tell you how you expect your employees to behave. And if all the employees did everything exactly as planned, I don't think we'd be having this podcast right now.
Okay.
No. Right. So we know that in the course of any employee's life cycle, they're going to be what we call yellow light events. And those are just deviations from the norm, right? Deviations from those expectations. So it could be someone goes on an FMLA leave. Someone has a performance issue. Someone violates a policy. Someone tells a stupid joke that's, you know, not appropriate. Things that need to be documented on how you dealt with them. So a performance issue, you know, all those things that you say to your managers, make sure you document it. That's going to go. So employee relations documentation, very easy in our system, quick and easy. What happened? What was the issue? Who was involved? What action did you take? And maybe uploading some documentation so that you have it. It's centrally stored so that regardless of attrition or turnover, it's available when you need it. And you can also report on it, see trends. Then you have your red light events. Those are allegations of misconduct, issues that may come up that if not treated properly, that if not investigated thoroughly, can really cause more damage to your employees, to the employer, to your brand. For some organizations, if you're in healthcare, it could cause damage to patients or community. So, you know, can really cause much more harm. And that's when you really need to go through a comprehensive fact-finding process. So in that case, we have a three-step investigation process that whether you're an experienced investigator or a novice, it really walks you through the steps. It doesn't handcuff you. because we know that investigations are all different and they flow differently, but it kind of gives you guardrails to make sure you stay on track, to make sure you do the things that are required. One of the things that it does in the interview process is help you very clearly communicate and document expectations to the employee, what they should expect from you during the process and what you expect from them during the process. And the reason why I call that out is one of the things I feel very strongly about with the Me Too, what we're seeing on Me Too and the numbers about people not reporting. We always hear that people don't report. Oh, we have to set up new reporting mechanisms. We have to give them 25 different ways to report the issues. I don't think that's a problem. I think people know where they should report an issue. They just don't want to because they don't know what's going to happen when they do it. And it's scary. And they don't know how they're going to be treated. They don't know who's going to find out. So if you can really start setting those expectations, showing the employees that there is a process, that you are going to do something about it, you're going to take them through a fair and comprehensive process, they're going to be much more accepting of it. And believe it or not, well, they're going to actually start talking about that. If I'm a witness on an investigation and I see that there's a process in place, I'm going to know that if I have an issue, I can feel comfortable going forward to HR. So those are some of the things that the system really helps provide for organizations.
And then with us being a dashboard, you know, we're all about the data. So I'm really curious about what are some of the data points and metrics that companies are gaining from your system to be able to understand how well they're dealing with these issues. Is it around number of employee relations they have? Are they looking at it by department, by location, by employee level? Are they tracking how quickly? I mean, are they treating this like a CRM for employees?
Exactly. Yeah. It's more than a CRM because it has really the workspace, but the data you can get out of it is exactly all of those things you said in different kind of ways, shapes, and forms. So it's by number of cases by issue, by location. You can look at it by the number of cases compared to the number of people in that particular department or that particular location. So you can see if there's gaps. You know, you might have, let's say you had 10 cases in San Francisco in 1 month and you have 1,000 employees and you had 10 cases in New York, but you only have 200 employees. That's going to tell you something right away. Something's going on. Either there's an underreporting problem in San Francisco, which is possible. That's risky. Or there's you have some other bigger issues in the other location, which I can't remember what name I gave it, that you need to kind of pinpoint. So it's pulling that data out. It's us pushing that data to clients. It's looking at it visually, but also be able to go and look at the data specifically, run reports. If you have a large group doing investigations, it also allows you to look from a productivity standpoint. You could see where things are getting held up. You know, investigations, sometimes people say, well, does it help you do things more quickly? And that can be true, but an investigation doing things more quickly isn't necessarily a good thing. So I don't love that metric, but it can help you understand about how long different types of issues should take. Right? The time and attendance might be a once and done type of thing, but a sexual harassment thing on average might take us 3 to 4 weeks to get through. So you can find where your anomalies are. It also can help you with staffing. And quite frankly, we've had many HR leaders use it to get more staff. We were talking about this before, Bruce. You know, HR doesn't have a ton of resources and a lot of money coming into their budget. So you have to be able to show with data what your needs are, what you're working on. It also is incredible to take that data about cases to your business leaders and have a conversation about with it, because it helps you ask them questions about what's going on in your organization. Look, I see your number of cases and this has gone up since something happened, you know, since X, Y, or Z. You know, what's going on? It looks like we've seen a different trend here. You know, it can impact turnover. So it really allows you as an HR professional to have those strategic conversations, data-driven strategic conversations with your business partners.
You did a great job of answering not only that question, but also my next question, which was, what are some of the actionable things that HR leaders are doing once they see the data? And to your point, to be able to get more headcount in the HR department, to be able to handle more issues, it's clearly an actionable thing that you could do that would be very difficult to communicate to a CFO without the data.
And also looking at, you know, you can look at your external counsel costs, you know, your legal fees, your settlements. You know, you may not have the benchmark for that right away. Well, I'm sure you know how much from a legal standpoint you pay, but that's going to help. You can also show, I know a lot of your listeners are from smaller organizations or organizations that might have EPL insurance, employer practices liability insurance. So it's a great way to show your insurance provider what you're doing and potentially reduce your deductible or reduce your premium as well. So there are definitely some financial tie-ins, which we know is what organizations are looking for.
So last question before we go into our lightning round. I'm sure that there are a lot of people, a lot of HR people, operations leaders who are listening thinking, Deb, this sounds amazing. I can't wait to get off the listen to this podcast and email you, but I probably can't get budget for this, or it's going to be very difficult to get budget to manage something like this. So how have you been able to help HR leaders go back to their stakeholders and explain the ROI they'll get from implementing a system that automates this process?
Yeah, we have a couple of different tools, a couple of different calculators that we share to talk about to help them understand what their costs are so we can share that with them. We've also tried to make it easy, particularly for smaller organizations, to have something that, you know, it's not free, but it's easy to show the cost. I mean, when you start thinking about legal fees, hourly lawyer rates, when you start thinking about the time that you're spending on these employer relations issues and the other things that you could be doing, it's not that difficult to make a case for it.
Got it. So now it's time for my favorite section of the podcast, which is the real, the random, and the ridiculous. So, are you ready?
I guess so.
All right. So, the real question. I'm a self-identified bread pudding connoisseur. And so, I always need to know from each guest, you know, do you like bread pudding? And if so, what's your favorite kind? How do you like it made?
I didn't know there were different kinds. I do. Because it kind of tastes like a bowl full of French toast.
Oh, yes. Yes, right? It does. There's a lot of different kind. And I jokingly say, half joking, that if you don't like bread pudding, I don't know if I could be your friend.
We're good. You like rice pudding?
I do.
Okay, good. I'm a big rice pudding.
Yeah, I'm a pudding guy. Rice pudding, banana pudding, bread pudding. That's great. Okay, so the random question. If you were doing anything else outside of saving the world from itself by streamlining employee relations and issues, what would you be doing?
Oh my God, I haven't had time to think about that. I'm sort of busy the past many years. I don't know. I always said when I first started my business, for some reason, I started taking tennis lessons. I'd never played before in my life and I loved it. And I had to stop because I had all these other things going on. I was running a business. I said to myself, someday when I'm done with my business, years from now, I'm going to become a really good tennis player. I'm terrible, but so I don't know, maybe I'll play tennis.
Love it. Can't wait to see you on the court. Can't wait to watch you on TV. All right, and then the last question, the ridiculous one. What are some of the most ridiculous things that you see a lot of companies dealing with, which clearly should just not be happening in the workplace? And I know there's a lot of very mainstream issues, but what are some of the ones where you just really have to scratch your head and thinking, I can't believe this type of stuff is happening in a lot of these corporations across the country?
Really? You're going to get me on this one, the last question? I was answering the question so nicely.
Yep.
I don't know. I listened to a radio show a while ago. I don't know what it was. And it was like the worst bosses episodes or tell us about your coworkers. And people were calling in and talking about their coworkers that like sat and picked their teeth and did like these really horrible things. I'm like, how are they hiring these people? So I don't know. I don't think that answers your question, but sometimes I look at employee etiquette and the issues that we see come across from our clients that they share things with us. Someday I'm going to write a book about.
Nice. That was a great answer. That's fine.
I try.
I'm excited with that. So this has been an awesome podcast. You've been an awesome guest. Deb, thank you so much.
Woo! It's been a lot of fun.
This is great.
The audience roars.
Yeah. So where can people find you and HRAcuity online?
Oh, absolutely. Go to www.HRAcuity. That's HRACUITY.com.
All right. and we'll be happy to provide all that info in the show notes. So, all you awesome, kick-ass HR and people operations leaders, thanks again for listening to another episode of Employee Cycle. We really love you to be a part of this community where you're learning all about HR trends, data, and everything that's going on in HR. We really appreciate you. If you like this episode or any other episode, please give it a 5-star rating because that lets us know that we are providing value to you. And if you have not yet, please make sure that you download our podcast player on whatever podcast player you listen to, Spotify or any type of app that you use on your Android and iPhone. So, all of you, please remember to continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.